True, because you cannot tell someone without showing what is the alternative.
That's right. Yeah. That's just like we're planting seeds in the ground, we're planting seeds in people's consciousness.
An excerpt from The Ants and the Grasshopper. We just have 15 seconds. Raj Patel, why Danita want to come to the United States with her message from Malawi?
Because she believes that we can change. And I think, you know, the message of the pandemic and of this moment is not only that we must recognize that an injury to one is an injury to all, but there is the possibility of change and that it's never too late.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. We're going to do part two of our discussion with you, as well as Rupa Maria, about the book Inflamed. This is a critical discussion, Deep Medicine and the Anatomy of Injustice. Thank you so much, Raj Patel. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
La ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie. Et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi. Et perdu parmi ces gens qui me bousculent, étourdi, désemparé, je reste là. Quand soudain je me retourne, il se recule.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
I'm out to sing songs that will prove to you that this is your world, and that if it's hit you pretty hard and knocked you down, for a dozen loops, no matter how hard it's run you down and rolled over you, no matter what color, what size you are, how you're built, I am out to sing the songs that will make you take pride in yourself.
I'm Lori Sonnenfeld.
And I'm Don Jacobson.
Together we bring you Moving On, Fridays from 12 noon to 1:30.
We feature both traditional and contemporary folk music.
We love to present live in-studio concerts from local and national musicians.
Tune in and you'll hear music that is socially progressive, moving, and heartfelt.
Music heard only on the left-hand edge of the dial and only on KBOO.
Every Friday, noon to 1:30.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:01 a.m. It's Monday. Time for more talk radio with your hosts, Cecil Prescott and Celeste Carey. Stay tuned.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO FM 90.7 on your FM dial, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.FM. Today is Monday, the 2nd of August in the year 2021. And it is about 8:03 a.m. My name is Cecil Prescott, and My partner is Celeste Carey, and we...
Good morning.
And good morning, Celeste. How are you this morning?
I'm above ground.
Okay. That's a good place. Good place to be. It's a good place
and
to be.
Sunshine. Yes, it is.
And our numbers, let me remind our listeners, our phone numbers for you to call in is 503-231-8187.
Yes, indeed. And we invite you to the conversational table here. Examine, elucidate, all of those things.
Yes.
So we were trying to decide among a couple of aspects of not only the Olympics to talk about, but I also know that, well, a lot of you know that the moratorium that we had on evictions, especially with regard to the COVID virus, they expired Saturday. And what was really frustrating for some of our elected was that I believe it was the House of Representatives decided this was a good time to take a vacation, to take a leave, to have a recess.
Well, they worked very hard in August to Congress take off, and as you suggested, the House left. The Senate stayed in session working on some other issues, but as you are correct, you know, the hardworking Congress people had to take off.
Yeah, and so I know that has left a lot of people anxious and fearful. What does it mean? And, you know, one of the things that we broached here on More Talk Radio was the idea that there needed to be a multifaceted approach to the whole situation, because small landlords maybe need that rent to stay afloat. However, people also need to have a place to live. And we wanted to invite your comments about that. You know, how do we deal with housing in the United States? As we know, there are different types of property owners, different types of landlords when it comes to housing. There are the small level people who buy a property. Sometimes they themselves are middle class people who scrimp and save and sweat to get that money to buy this house and to have some kind of pension, some kind of income when they're older and not able to work, or just want to be able to not work. And so they're not the same as some of these large scale investment companies or property owners that own a string of apartment complexes, not just in a city or a state, but maybe nationally. And so that is a whole different venture. We're wondering what kinds of thoughts you have with regard to how we as a society find a middle ground. And I'm not talking about a middle ground for some of the richer, bigger landlords. I'm talking about those for whom that lack of payment on that mortgage would mean they lose that property, which would mean that the house is no longer owned by anyone who might be sympathetic. It might be owned by a bank or credit union or investment company because, you know, the owner loses it. I think sometimes we have the wrong attitude when it comes to housing. And having worked for the city, one of the things that I remember is when working with some of our partners and some of the low-income to moderate-income housing units is that housing was looked at as a necessity.
Well,
and you know, people who even had committed crimes were told, you know, you got to have a place to live. So some landlords was considered a place of last resort that had to have people, had to give people a space to live, and that the powers that be were not so quick to evict them because they have to live somewhere. And perhaps we don't take the right approach to housing. Too often it's used as, it's highly commodified. I guess that's what the best way to say it is. And so we wanted to just invite your conversations about that. And,
yes, and some of you might have been listening to the Democracy Now! Just before our program aired. And if we heard a reflection, a conversation, an interview with Congressperson Cori Bush, representative from St. Louis, who not so many years ago was unhoused and lived out of her car. And she and numerous congressional representatives are protesting the House ending its session without acting on the on this end of the moratorium by sleeping on the congressional steps of Washington. It's an ongoing protest, so it's certainly an issue that is in the middle of all of our conversations and ought to be. And our numbers here are 503-231-8187, as Celeste ask all of us, what are some of your thoughts in terms of how we address this issue and move to a place where housing is not only philosophically a right of a human right, but also in realistically, how do we make it a possibility for it to become an existential reality? Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Give us a call and share your thoughts and comments on this issue. And as you are dialing and thinking about this, I'm going to toss out four names right now and see if you know what they all have in common. If you know why, also give us a call, 503-231-8187. And those names are Noah Lyles, Sha'Carri Richardson, Simone Biles, and Naomi Osaka. Four names. What do they have in common? Give us a call at 503-231-8187.
Okay. Well, I would say one of the things they have in common is that they play sports.
Play sports. Okay. They are athletes. You are correct, and you win the big prize, Celeste.
Oh, well, you know, big prize is nice. What's the big prize? More questions.
More questions. So yes, they are all athletes. What else? Are there anything else they hold in common? Or not in common?
Let's see. They wouldn't be people of color, would they?
Well, as a matter of fact, Naomi Simone, Sha'Carri, and Noah are all people of color. Okay.
Okay, so let me think. They play sports and they're people of color. And I got to start playing brand new. Okay. They are elite level Olympic participants, elite level athletes who are Olympic participants.
Yes. Oh, you are doing so very well. They are elite athletes who are, what did you say about Olympics?
Yes, participated in the 2021 Olympics in Tokyo.
Well,
Or did not,
right. One of those did not participate in the Olympics. And it's getting to a point that we will flesh out more. But what else do they have in common? Can you imagine?
Well, they didn't perform.
No. In fact, of the four, two have performed. One is probably performing today. One will perform later on. One did perform, but was eliminated. Let me just clarify a little bit more. I don't want to keep people in suspense.
In suspense.
Yeah. They are all athletes, as Celeste mentioned. They are all elite athletes who had the potential to perform in the Olympics this year in Tokyo. Naomi Osaka represented Japan, who is the tennis player. Simone Biles, the United States, who is a gymnast. Sha'Carri Richardson is track and field athlete. And Noah Lyles is also track and field. They all have been part of I don't know whether it's intentional, but a new movement or awareness in terms of mental health. And I would just suggest that an article out of Vox.com recently talks a little bit about most of these athletes. And as they have raised the issue of mental health, something that for many generations, something that people were embarrassed to talk about or did not know how to talk about. And in this article in Vox.com, it talks about this is America's mental health moment. It is finally here by Anna North. Noah Lyles, who's a 200-meter runner, tweeted a year ago that, you know, he had some health problems and that he was going to be on antidepressant medication. Naomi Osaka, we might be aware of, withdrew from the French Tennis Open a few weeks ago because she didn't withdraw. She was fined because she refused to be to participate
in the media.
In the media, right.
Mm-hmm.
And she raised the issue that for her mental health was necessary. And you want to talk about Sha'Carri Richardson or Simone Biles, Celeste?
Well, Sha'Carri was, she was censured for having marijuana in her system, which she said was a calming, had a calming effect. We all know that that's the way we're doing marijuana now.
And why, what, Why was she using marijuana? It was a common effect, but it was related to some issues or crisis in her own life, right? Correct?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Her birth mother had recently died just before the U.S. trials, okay? And Simone Biles, what do we
well,
know?
Simone about? Was, as perhaps premier gymnast of probably gymnastics, she found herself being disoriented by what they call the twisties, where you can lose track of where you are in the air, and so you're disoriented and don't know how to maneuver your body properly to avoid injury. And she was smart enough to say, no, I'm not going to do this. And she withdrew from several events.
Yeah. She said something that was revolutionary for an elite athlete. She said, I have to focus on my mental health and not jeopardize my health and well-being. Which was unexpected for many because she has been lauded as, you know, the greatest gymnast of all time, and she was going to lead her team to gold in the Olympics. And Simone said, Ms. Biles said that she needed to take care of herself. And what was as startling, it's not so much as these athletes talking about the importance of mental health, but some of the reaction of the media and of bystanders about these people. Some of the commentators ridicule these athletes, whether or not they were so-called strong enough or prepared enough, and as if there was something they should be ashamed of. And as Naomi Osaka said in an essay she wrote in Time couple of months ago, earlier this year, she said, it's okay not to be okay, and it's okay to talk about it.
And what you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the Gorge, 104.3 in the Willamette River Valley, and www.kboo.fm on the web. Our number is 503-231-8187, and join in the conversation. And sorry for jumping in there on you, Susan.
Oh, no. Go ahead. No, thank you for doing that. Yes.
So you were saying...
Well, I was saying that what I think is important is that this is a time, and what we are discovering is that people are more open to talk about mental health, and it is something that has moved beyond the hush-hush of whispers in conversations. And as the writer Anna North writes, this is a generation that is agreeing that it's okay to talk about these issues and not be ashamed.
Well, you know, it's time, and it's especially time within communities of color. Yeah.
things?
Because we face such stigma for looking toward the mental health community for help. And for many folks of color, there's a distrust anyway of the medical community because of the way folks of color have been treated, whether we've been commodified or disregarded. So for us to stand up and say, not only am I claiming my right for self-preservation and for care for mental health, you know, we are demanding that there be provision for us. And here in the Portland area, Abel Gourley has been a major champion for culturally sensitive and culturally relevant mental health care. So this is an issue that is not just on a local stage, it's on an international stage right now.
Yes, and so let's go to our callers. Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. And let's go to a caller right now. Good morning, caller.
Good morning. Hi, this is Peter. And I would like to comment, or actually I'll just take my response off the air, but, you know, there's a tremendous, obvious issue with homeless in Portland, and it's nothing new, but, you know, I think that there's been other cities that have had a proven track record, basically, of utilizing, you know, either hotels or apartment buildings, and they find a place for people to live. And it's actually something that will save money. I mean, I don't remember the exact ratio with the dollar count, but if you think about how many resources are basically, I mean, I want to say wasted between people walking by, complaining, calling the police, calling the neighbors, and all these other things, as opposed to being supportive and understanding and thinking about what they're feeling and what they're thinking emotionally. I know, I think it would be a huge, tremendous toll for myself to be trying to sleep in the streets. And not all of these homeless people have mental issues. I mean, obviously the ones that do need other resources, but, you know, there's a tremendous opportunity here in Portland for people to step up in that manner, including the city council. All right, I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Peter. Celeste?
You know, I can't even argue with what Peter says. You know, having help with public safety and those who are homeless and trying to find a place to sleep, I know that hotels are a resource. I also know that across from, I'm forgetting the name, but it's a transition. Okay, there is a shelter and project. This is a transition project on Broadway and Northwest Holt. Across from the building are a bunch of little tiny units for sleeping pods. And there's so many things we could do as a society, as a city, to get people some shelter. Part of the challenge is that we have mega large companies and business entities that seek not to pay taxes that could, you know, offset those taxes if they want, or get a whole lot of capital, social capital, by helping pay for sleeping pods or tiny houses or anything.
Yes.
And here in Portland, we know we share the same fate as many West Coast and warmer area metro places, metropolitan areas, by having a large degree of unhoused people. And we're not doing what we should do. I can't even argue with what Peter says. You know, there might be certain aspects of it or nuances that we're missing. But for the most part, what he's saying is just dead on. What are we doing with these empty buildings? Or what are we doing with places that could be retrofitted and provide sleeping shelter and places to just be human, take a shower, rest for a moment?
Yes, and as Peter reminded us all, that people are houseless for numerous reasons. Some of it is because of mental health issues. Some of it might be because of economic issues. The rent's too high. And people, as we began our conversation this morning, talking about the end to the eviction moratorium, and there are many individuals, families, who are forced out of their dwelling places because of the inability to afford the rent or the house payment. And as Peter and Celeste both suggested, there are options of to the layperson, there are options that are not being examined or utilized in terms of empty buildings, apartments, condos, homes that could be used by those who are houseless. And as Congressperson Cori Bush and her some of her colleagues are saying right now, is something that should be addressed in terms of the moratorium, which existed because of the pandemic, which is still here, and people are still having difficulty finding housing. So it's an ongoing problem, and it's an ongoing problem that we need to address. You're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO. I am Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey, and we're waiting for you.
So give us a call, 231-503-231-8187. We mentioned the houseless issues, and the other topic is not all things Olympics, but certain things that are Olympics, and certainly among those is the awareness that is being that the increased awareness around mental health. And the ability of these elite athletes to talk about mental health and the need for mental health. And regardless of what certain well-paid, overweight commentators might say, I think athletes who have prepared their bodies are well prepared to talk about what it means to be a healthy individual mentally and physically.
Phone number is 503-231-8187. Well, you know, one of the things it takes for being healthy, especially when you're at that level, is being able sometimes to separate yourself from the environment that you actually have to participate in, which, you know, it sounds like an oxymoron, you know, I'm here, but I'm not here. And one of the things that I find, well, this is kind of separate from the whole mental health conversation, you know, and I kind of alluded to it a little bit before we talked. And that is, it seems that to me there's a lot of unwarranted attention some of the athletes of color, you know, and for sure Simone got a lot of criticism because she was considered kind of like letting the team down. What's the point of you getting there if you're not going to perform, you know? And not just from disgruntled fans. There was a comedian, I believe his name was Michael Shea.
Yes.
Criticized her, you know, not accepting the fact that he lives in the same perilous environment that she does by virtue of having, you know, black skin. But then I was frustrated because it seemed like there was that usual, what do we want to call it? Well, there was not equal treatment. Mm-hmm. There was not equal treatment because I also noticed that there was a U.S. shot putter, Raven Saunders, who is a black woman, and she was given a lot of grief because they accused her of breaking Olympic rules with her protest.
Mm-hmm.
And that she could have been penalized for her gesture when she was on the podium. Mm-hmm. You know, yet you had the swimmer, Michael Andrew, who didn't have on a mask, and he blatantly ignored the rules that Tokyo had established for participation by not wearing his mask. And he blithely said, well, I can't breathe with it. When you saw other people striving to comply with those rules and huffing and puffing behind a mask, and you know, it looks like, oh, he's going to get us a slap on the wrist. And I don't know, the Olympic Games have lost their shine for me. They used to be something that I look forward to watching other countries compete, and you know, not just having a moment of national pride, but just pride over small countries kicking butt, you know, underdogs kicking butt, you know, people coming up with novel ways of addressing the challenges of the sport, you know, and now it's all about how much we're doing right or doing wrong, or how the games are being commodified, and how countries are mistreating their own people to look good for the international gaze by hiding away their homeless or the poor or the people with mental illness issues so that the whole town looks clean and pristine. And it's like, I don't know, I've lost that love of the participation, you know. And as a I have to say former athlete, particularly right now, but you know, that used to be the thing. Everybody thought about how they were going to perhaps go to the Olympics, going through from elementary all the way through college. You know, that might be your goal. That might be something that you talked about. And these ideas of not only you being the best of the best, but being good, having good what's the word I want? Of being respectful, of being the best kind of person you should be, of being a champion, not just in terms of sports, but in the way you treated each other. It seems to be lost.
And
or am I the only one that thinks that?
Let's see what Robbie's on the line. Let's see what Robbie has to say. Good morning, Robbie.
Oh, good morning, good morning. I definitely agree with you, Celeste. I think that the Olympics isn't really, I don't know, it's been a little bit different for sure, and I heard a pretty funny joke about how the Olympics community was more, they were making sure to protect their athletes from marijuana than they were the gymnast coaches.
Yes.
Yeah, sad.
And it's just so unfortunate that it's turned into the, I don't know, it's hard to have respect for, you know, stuff that, you know, is penalizing marijuana or even breastfeeding mothers. I don't know if you heard that story, but there was a swimmer who had a pole. They did a lot of stuff that I wasn't particularly supportive of, and so it's been hard watching it too.
Well,
I wanted to go ahead.
No, I was getting ready to say, you know, the whole thing is it's as if we've forgotten that we're human beings in the midst of all this. It's as though we've forgotten that regardless of why we're competing, we're supposed to be competing as people to uphold lofty and honorable ideas and not just go out there and compete for selfish reasons. And to make women have to wear bikini bottoms to play sports,
yep,
or to, you know, try to shame a breastfeeding mother, or to criticize a person for wanting to take care of their whole selves, you know, mentally and physically, and be told, well, you're a waste of skin because you didn't compete for your country. You know, it goes against what was supposed to be the initial reason for having these games in the first place.
Yeah. The story about the volleyball team, that was sick. It made me really sad. I had no idea that was what there was like a length on that. Anyway, I'm going to switch gears a bit. I wanted to talk about the homeless problem, the homeless issue that we're facing. And there was interesting stuff that France passed with their food waste laws. Mm. They passed laws, and what they started doing is they started charging companies for the food waste, you know, all their food waste. Mm-hmm. To try to curb that down. And it's just funny because I was driving around town and I was looking at all these giant empty, you know, studio apartments, and I'm thinking they should make that a law. If a developer makes a building and it's vacant, you know, say 4 or 6 months, then they start getting charged. Mm-hmm. They should start getting charged that, and then hopefully maybe they would curb the prices, they'd bring them down or something. But oh, just something to help make, you know, I don't know, just a thought that I had. I wanted to run that by you. I wanted to see what you thought about maybe using, yeah, something like that as a deterrent from leaving these empty houses so empty.
Hey, that's interesting. Let me make sure I understand you clearly. The suggestion is to find like owners of these vacant condos or apartments or homes, with the purpose of them might lowering the price so that they might be more affordable?
Yeah, like if there's, you know, if an apartment's listed at $1,500 and it's just sitting there vacant, but they're going to get charged, you know, $500 a month for a vacant building, they might lower it and might keep rent in check.
Uh-huh. I hadn't heard that. That's...
I had that thought yesterday when because I was moving, so it's not been fun, but I'm like going around and I'm like, it's so expensive here, it's ridiculous, there's all these empty houses, and I was like, they should charge these people.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you should say that. One thing that people who have tried to move into some of these corporate-owned properties may recognize is that the rent price that you will find at any given day at a corporately owned property can change day to day. It can change week to week. They actually have something like pricing similar to the stock exchange in that they monitor vacancy rates and, you know, the migration or moving into the city, moving out of the city rates and everything, and change the prices of housing daily. So you might find that an apartment you look at, say, in the Rose Garden area, you may look at it and one day it's $1,500 a month. You may look at it 2 days later because you are narrowing it down and you find that it's $1,550 a month. And you have to wonder if this quest for having such high rates of rent and trying to extract the most you can out of the rental market is also one of the reasons why it is so hard for people to find housing. I mean, it has to be. I can't see why it wouldn't be. So I don't know how you would construct the algorithm, you know, that would charge these people and penalize these companies for doing this. But I think that just mentioning it and putting it on the table has to start people thinking, how can we change how we charge rent in this area, if nothing else. I don't even know where to start. But this is as good as anything that I've heard, so why not? Maybe somebody else out there has another thought.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, it's funny. I used to work in the mortgage industry in 2008 and 2009when I was
recession. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was picking up the pieces, and I saw firsthand how the mortgage companies did it. And so, but you know, in my perfect world, right? In my perfect world, it'd be great where it's just, you have a flat rate. You're going to get charged $500 for each empty vacant bedroom, you know. But that's it is complicated. It is more complicated than that. It's not going to happen. but starting to think of these might push something for it. So anyway, thank you very much for the show and the conversation. And I'll take the rest of my answers off the air.
All right. Thank you for your call. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. It's Monday. It's August 2nd. And where is the summer going? but more importantly, join the conversation. Tell me how is the summer going for you? We're talking about the Olympics, various aspects of the Olympics, from the disparity of respect, I guess I'll call it that, among some of the American, U.S. Participants, mental health, and sportsmanship of some of the U.S. participants. We're also talking about this whole issue of homelessness and how, brought on by the recess of the U.S. House, the moratorium on evictions is in limbo, and I'm sure a lot of people are anxious as to what they're going to do if this moratorium is not extended. But conversely, I'm sure there's a lot of anxiety for small and, you know, moderate level landlords who don't make a lot of money. What's going to happen if their needs are not considered? So join in the conversation. The number is 503-231-8187.
Yes. And, you know, going back on the issue about mental health and how it has become a center of lots of conversation and the North rights, it is also not surprising that young people are at the forefront of a mental health revolution, since they appear more adept than their elders at recognizing mental health problems. Members of Gen Z, and those are those born, say, after 1996, in general report worse mental health than their elders, with just 45% saying their mental health well-being was good or very good in a 2019 survey, compared with 56% of millennials. The pandemic has also taken an outside toll on young people, with 62.9% of 18 to 24 years old reporting symptoms of anxiety or depression in a 2020 CDC survey, the highest of any age group. And Gen Z are more likely than their elders to seek help for mental health problems. This is likely, she writes, because Gen Zers have been exposed to more outreach on mental health by college and universities, as well as more awareness of these issues among parents than older generations.
Well, there's a lot of speculation as to why, and some research. Some anecdotal reasons are the cumulative effect of living in today's society with parents who are struggling either to keep a job or address racial or gender identity disparities. And, you know, that has a trickle-down effect. You know, when we talk of epigenetic stress and how stress is passed on through your DNA to your children and grandchildren, and actually even to you from your ancestors, as well as the experiential aspects of stress being passed down, and that's some of the behaviors that parents have. Maybe your grandparent had challenges, and so your parents have some behavior and personality problems that help them adapt, but they weren't necessarily healthy, and you learned those same behaviors, or you adapted, you know, you're going to feel a heavier cumulative burden, and you're going to either manifest it or you're going to seek out help for it. And then the caregivers in our community are going to recognize it, and they're going to do more outreach to younger people and try to do that. So, I mean, there's lots of reasons why. But I applaud younger people for stepping up and stepping out and reaching out and trying to get help, because that's the only way we're going to be able to change that whole dynamic that surrounds the whole mental health challenge. The whole mental health stigma, the whole mental health community, is that, yeah, we got to figure out a new way of addressing this, because what we've been doing doesn't work.
Yeah.
Does not work.
It does not work. And, you know, as you and Robbie were talking about, I think earlier, around our views of athletics, Anna North writes, you know, American ask a lot of its athletes. They train often from very young ages at sports that risk their health and sometimes their very lives. Just prior to the Olympics, Biles completed a vault so dangerous that no other female gymnast had even tried it. They endure constant pressure to win and constant scrutiny when they falter even for a moment. They also have to show up at press conferences and be personable and relatable, all while holding themselves to a different standard of behavior than ordinary people by, for example, never smoking marijuana. And the requirement for black female athletes historically has been more taxing, with players like Serena Williams subjected to endless body-shaming, racism, and disparate treatments by sports governing bodies. These athletes are still expected to be stand-in for America's greatness on a world stage, even when America, from sporting officials to the media, has often been far from great to them. Such factors make it all the more remarkable, or perhaps all the more overdue, that black female athletes have been some of the first to stand up on the national stage and say, enough. And so we should offer praise and thanks to athletes such as Naomi Osaka, who jump-started this international conversation around mental health when she announced in May that she would not participate in mandatory press conferences ahead of the French Open. These athletes, in many cases, we should admire them not only for their athleticism, but for their ability to stand up for issues that are important to a larger community whether it is standing up for social justice, or in as in this case this morning, we're talking about the importance of mental health.
Or, you know, standing up for just the right to be a human being, just the right to address the fears and concerns of being a human being. But it is 8:53. You got a few minutes to join in, give your thoughts here on your Community Connection, KBOO. What's coming up at 9 o'clock?
At 9 o'clock is, if you stay tuned to this wonderful station, KBOO, is the OMO Variety Hour. Joe Clement hosts this episode, and we'll hear from Bill Resnick talk to Caitlin Day, a community organizer challenging the city's policy of sweeping, harassing, and criminalizing the homeless, including the current campaign, quote, End Clean and Save. What a name, End Clean and Save, that will replace them with a policy of creating housing and providing services. Also on that program, the Left and the Law, Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker take up the recent wave of lawsuits filed by city and states against the oil industry in the U.S. based on the industry damage to communities and covering up their own scientific data on the lethal threats of fossil fuel to the planet. And I report back about the picture of the O-Town Voodoo Donuts last week from Donut Workers United organizer. But also a longer conversation about the worker-led organizing going on in shop and management anti-union activities surrounding fired heat wave strikers and a recent union election. All this coming up on the OMO Variety Hour, which follows our program at 9 a.m.
Well, as we get closer to the end of the show, kind of to wrap up some of the points that we brought up, I wanted to go back to initially when you brought up Noah Lyles and Sha'Carri and Naomi and Simone, and just kind of tie that back in to how it seems, well, tie that back into our whole statement, not just the whole thing about mental health, but how sometimes the athletes of color seem to be inordinately, I don't want to say target, but yeah, let's just
say it.
Focused upon.
Okay.
Well, the reason I don't want to say targets is because it's kind of like people who have gone through something, even though they might have been victimized, they don't see themselves as victims. And mm-hmm. and that's one of the healthy aspects of having gone through some kind of traumatic experience, is not allowing yourself to be labeled a victim so that right. you don't succumb to that internally. So that's why I don't want to say target. And maybe I'm wrong, I don't know. But you had initially started out by pointing out how their particular weakness or challenge, I shouldn't say weakness, but it's viewed that way, their challenge, their challenging moment, you know, has been highlighted as though they've done something wrong instead of taking care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And how communities of color, athletes of color, doesn't matter, countries of color, it seems like there's this inordinate focus on and breaking down of life experiences. And so you had started out bringing them up, and I just wanted to take it full circle, if you would.
Well, you know, I think as we look at the Olympics, and it's, you know, every 4 years, this, as you suggested, Celeste, this worldwide attention, and it has have this mythology built all around it, and although some of it luster may is no longer as bright, it still remains a universal campaign or universal activities around athleticism. And I think one thing that I've certainly have learned in the last few months from these athletes is their ability to stand up for not only social justice in general, but also the health and well-being, mental and physical, of individuals and communities.
That's right. And if you're interested in hearing a little bit more about that, there is an article. It's On Her Turf, T-U-R-F, On Her Turf. And Monica McNutt and Michelle Carter and others talk about the burden of athletes of color, and especially with regard to the Olympics. Monday mouth. And you can find that online and read it and just get a little deeper idea about how it is to participate on that high level and on that big stage and perform under all that pressure and still try to excel. But as you go through your day, you know, we wish you well so that you can excel in all areas.